I think I'll speak primarily, at least initially, so that you who are very new and friends of Shweta, you're here because she invited you, so that you can follow. But I also have to keep in mind there's all these little children, and somehow they have to be something other than a playful mood. This is a special day in our calendar. We're honoring, see that picture right there in the corner of the counter, right here, with a garland around. That's a picture of Bhaktivinod Thakur. Bhaktivinod Thakur is one of the reasons why we're here. He's a great personality, and in our Sanskrit language, it's Acharya. He's a great teacher and a revolutionary personality. So I want to speak something in honor of him. A little. Good luck. A little sketch of his life, and then some of the details of his life. He was born in a family that had great heritage. For those of you that are not our new guests, he is in the seventh. He appeared seventh in the line of an associate of Lord Nityananda. So Lord Nityananda lived in Ekachakra and then traveled throughout India, stayed in Vrindavan for some time, and then went to Mayapur. For the rest, he was just wherever Lord Chaitanya was. So Krishna Chandra Datta was an associate of Lord Nityananda, and from Krishna Chandra in his family line came Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So within his family was a very rich tradition of appreciating Lord Chaitanya and his teachings. He was born in 1836 in a very wealthy aristocratic family. He went to school with aristocrats. He was educated with the Tagore family, Rabindranath Tagore and the other Tagores. Rabindranath Tagore was a very prolific writer, a very famous man for his scholarship and erudition in India. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was his classmate, and the other intellectuals of his time. I can't do any better than what I'm doing. What would you like me to do? Stand up? If I speak closer to the mic, it's going to feed back. Is that better?
Yes.
That's better?
Yes.
Okay. To me, it sounds deafening, but that's better. Yes?
Yes.
Except for you sitting right next to the speaker. You're okay? You can move away a little bit if you want to. It's up to you. So, okay. Amongst the many, many things that Bhaktivinoda Thakur accomplished in his long life, there are five areas that are most pronounced. One of them were his literary contributions. You can hear better now? Okay. His literary contributions. Many of you are well-educated. For school, you've had to write papers. Maybe you had to write a a thesis, a master's thesis or a PhD thesis, something, even just writing a paper for school. Have ever had to write a paper for school? Just take, besides exams, write a paper? Did it take you a long time? Can you imagine writing a book? No. Can you imagine writing 10 books? 20 books? 50 books? 100 books? 110 books? Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote 110 books. And the range of his writing was from this end to this end. He wrote books in Sanskrit for the super intellectual Sanskrit scholars of his time. And over at this end were very simple teachings for illiterate people. In other words, it was songs because they couldn't read, but they could sing. So he wrote songs that they could sing and learn just by singing and singing and singing, and that way learn the message. And everything in between. He wrote in English, he wrote in Bengali, he wrote for intellectuals, he wrote for simple people, he wrote for... So another major contribution was he was a householder. Householder meant he was a family man. And some of you have one child, some of you have two children, some of you may have three children. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had 10 children, and he wrote 110 books. Did your child keep you busy? 10 children? And write 110 books? But that's not all he did. That's just two of the things. So because he was a householder, he knew what the challenges were for a householder to progress spiritually. And so his writings are for both. He purposefully, for renunciates, these set of instructions. For householders, these set of instructions both follow the same principle. But the application of the principle for householders. So those of you that are with family and would like to understand in some finer detail how to apply Krishna consciousness, bhakti principles in your life, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings will be a great resource for you. Another contribution, very significant contribution of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was that he reestablished the places of Krishna's pastimes, excuse me, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in Navadvip. And therefore, he was called by his contemporaries, some of them, the seventh Goswami. Now, this isn't going to mean anything to those of you, but it'll mean to the others, so I'll explain it. Amongst the followers of Lord Chaitanya, the principal associates were the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, yes? And the six Goswamis of Vrindavan did two things, primarily. They wrote books, as did Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He wrote books along the lines of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. The second thing was that they reestablished the places of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Because over a period of time, those places of pastimes were lost. Completely lost. The world did not know. Even the residents of Vrindavan did not know. And they had the task, the assignment, to establish them, find them, and establish the places of Krishna's pastimes. And they did that. And 400 years later, Bhaktivinoda Thakur did the same thing in Mayapur. Even a cell phone isn't good enough. It's the end of the world. See you later. Okay. Bhaktivinoda Thakur lived. I'll come back to the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes by describing the following. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life was during the pinnacle, the peak of British rule, ruling India. And the way things were at the time, the British were very expert at ruling. One of the things that they did was everything European was good and everything Indian was bad. So the writings of the Europeans were what the intellectuals were interested in. And they would ridicule purposefully, systematically, and selectively ridicule the teachings of the Vedas. In fact, they created a term called Indology. You've heard that term before. Indology. It was a nice way of saying mythology. In other words, intellectuals look down their nose at the foolish writings of India. They call it Indology. And so the intellectuals are very much interested in reading European writings from those times, the intellectuals of Germany and England and France and European writers, especially England. And they had some excellent writers. But the wisdom was not the same wisdom. It was speculation, not descending knowledge. Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was ruling at that, was living during that time where everything European is good and everything Indian is bad. But he was so good, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so good, that they posted him, the government of India gave him something they only gave to British people, the position of a high court judge. And within India, the system of high court judge was practically like that of the governor or the mayor, or it was the highest post you can get. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur, little anecdotal story, when he graduated from college, the family, because it was from an aristocratic family, someone, a family member, arranged for him to have a job as a manager in a business. And one of the first things that happened was he was looking at the accounts and he saw that a mistake was made, overcharging the customer more than the company should have charged. So he went to the customer and said, "You were overcharged, sir. Here's your money back. We made a mistake." Because he was honest. That was his character. So the owner of the company said, "I think you have the wrong profession. You should become a teacher or something that's brahminical, because you can't be honest in business like this. You don't give money back to people because you made a mistake against them and in your favor." But that was his character throughout his whole life. He was a man of character. I'll give three examples of that. Gradually, he was being posted in different government posts. In one of them, it was a village. before he became the high court judge in Jagannath Puri, it was a village. And in the village, there were people in the village who were worshipping a ghost. The ghost was said to be inhabiting a tree. And so the people would go there and make offerings to the ghost because they didn't want the ghost to give them any problem. And he was the judge. He was a government officer. So he took some of his own earnings and gave it to one Brahmana and said, "Brahmana, my dear sir, you are a very qualified person, but you need support from those who have finance. You just sit under this tree, and every day, all day long, you read out loud Srimad Bhagavatam. Start at the very beginning, and I'll cover your expenses. You just sit there and read Srimad Bhagavatam." And this went on for some period of time, 45 days, something like that. And the very day he finished reading Srimad Bhagavatam, a branch of the tree broke. The ghost made a loud sound saying, "You have liberated me by this sound vibration." And that was it. He was gone. He had great faith. During another incident was when he was the magistrate in Puri, there was a yogi who lived in a forested area outside of Puri that said he was God. And he has two friends, Brahma and Shiva. That's what he called them. He was Vishnu. His name was Bhishikasen. Bhishikasen. And he had long matted hair, and he had mystical powers. One of the things that he did, he would lean into fire where a normal person would just burn, and then he would sit back up, then lean into the fire and sit back up like that. And the king of Puri was charmed by the mystical powers. The man could make things appear in his hand. He could shake his head and fire would come out of his hair. He was cool. And the king then gave money to Bhishikasen to build a temple for Vishnu, for himself, because he was going to be the deity in the temple with Brahma and Shiva by his side. And the king also made arrangements for some very aristocratic ladies to come and join Bhishikasen for his rasa dance. We don't need to go into the details of what that meant. And some of the other aristocratic ladies heard about the other aristocratic ladies, and they also started going to this Bhishikasen's rasa dance. And it was the upstanding people of Puri were shocked and, you know, went to the government and said, "Do something." And the government wanted to do something, but everyone was afraid because he was so powerful. Who knew what would happen? Their family might be harmed, some danger or something. They were afraid, intimidated. He was a mystical guy. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur personally went, combined with police who stood behind him, not in front of him. And Bhishikasen shook his head and fire came out of his hair, and he said, "You know, I have a warrant for your arrest. You know, the paper signed by the government officer, and I want you to come with me back to Jagannath Puri and take darshan of Lord Jagannath." And the man said, "Why should I go see Lord Jagannath? He's just wood. I am God." And Bhaktivinoda Thakur became very unhappy. And he personally grabbed the man's arm. And the man said, because all the police gathered around, and he said, this is my Leela. I am Krishna, and you are Kamsa, and you want to take me to your prison. It's my Leela, I will go." When he went to prison, there was to be a trial. It was just to put him in the prison before the trial. The man was fasting. The trial went for 18 days, and he fasted every single day for 18 days. He was a powerful ascetic as well as a mystic. He made a curse and said, your whole family will die if you continue this prosecution. I'm Vishnu. And his daughter became very seriously feverish and ill. Bhaktivinoda Thakur continued. The wife of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying, please let him go. It's our family. Let us all die. But this man is to be punished. He's a rascal. And he continued. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur then himself got the same fever that his daughter got. And as he was writing the decision, his hand was shaking. But he continued. He was fearless. So he read the decision in the court. The constables came, and the first thing they did was they cut his hair. Because a yogi keeps his power in his long hair. And when his long hair was gone, he collapsed on the ground like a wet rag. And within 3 weeks, no, it was some longer period of time, within some period of time, he took poison and died. Krishna died by taking poison. He wasn't Krishna. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was principle-based. He was fearless. There was another situation where, because of his position as being a government officer, he came to know that the king of all of Orissa had stolen money from the deity. No. Yes. 80 lakhs. And that was 100 years ago. That's a lot more lakhs than today. The king had stolen the deity's money, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur knew it. He came to his attention. So what he decided to do was he told the king, rather than give the money back, he said, you should sponsor all of the 52 offerings of food every day for the deity. Do deity seva. And the king didn't like that. He didn't like being confronted by another person. So he engaged 50 Brahmins to do a yajna that would kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur knew this, and he continues just standing by principle, just to give you an idea of his character. At the end of the 30 days at which time Bhaktivinoda Thakur was to be killed, the son of the king died. The Brahmin has walked away. and the king understood the greatness of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He had offended a great Vaishnava, and because of that offense to a great Vaishnava, the reaction came to him. His son died. And there are many other such incidences. While he was fearless and principle-centered, he was also very capable of being using the method of humble persuasion. In contrast to his son, one of his 10 children was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, another acharya in our line of spiritual teachers. And what Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, because he was a government officer, so he had social obligations being a government officer. People would come to his home, and he would have to receive them. And rather than, because they were not at all spiritually minded persons, because he was who he was, and he had the capacity that he had the purity that he had, and with purity comes spiritual potency, he would have dialogue with them on intellectual subject matters and bring them to the position of accepting the supremacy of Krishna. His son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was much more confrontational, like, you know, with a chopper in his hand. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very gentle and used the approach of humble persuasion. So they would sometimes, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, sometimes my father and I would disagree with how we would speak to people. These people are rascals. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur approached in a different way. By humble persuasion, he helped to bring people to accepting. There's many nice examples of this, but time doesn't permit. So for all of this time that he spent in Jagannath Puri, raising 10 children, writing some portion of his 110 books, meeting with government officials and social circles, and dealing with, he was so good at his job as a judge. You know, court system in India is slower than it is here in America. You've heard that before, right? He, as one judge, would handle as many cases in the course of a day that many judges would handle in a month. Each day. And he kept... I have a description here of his daily schedule. Sometimes, if you look very closely at the paintings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wore a vest, and in his vest he had a watch. Now, we have these kinds of watches, and now everyone has these. Who has a watch? You just have a cell phone that has a clock and everything. But he had a pocket watch on a chain. And just to, because I can't remember the details of this, I want to read to you what his daily schedule was like. Okay. Sometime between 7:30 and 8 p.m., he would take rest. At 10 o'clock, he woke up. And he began to write. From 10 p.m. to 4 p.m., that's 6 hours. You got to find some time to write, right? So he just slept less. 6 hours every night, he wrote. Then, at 4 a.m., he took another half an hour of rest. Could you imagine if you had 2 hours of rest, wrote for 6 hours, and then took a nap at 4:30 in the morning? What time would you wake up? Half an hour later, he woke up. It was 4 to 4:30. Then he would wash his hands and his face, and he would chant japa. Then from 4:30 to 7, and this is every day, with his stopwatch. From 7 o'clock, he would write letters. At 7:30, he read. At 8:30, if there were any guests to see him, that's the time that he saw a guest, 8:30 in the morning. And if there weren't guests, he'd just keep reading. He then took a grand 15-minute nap. From 9:30 to 9:45. At 9:45, he had his morning bath, and here was his breakfast: a half quart of milk, 2 chapatis, and some fruit. This he did wearing his devotional clothes, and then he put on his uniform to go to the court. You know, the long robes, the British system, and the government sent a special carriage to take him from his home to the courthouse. 9:55, he went to the courthouse with big Vaishnav tilak and big Kuntimala. 8 strands, like big ones, like our japa beads, so everyone could see Vaishnav. Vaishnav sitting on the high court bench, wearing the robes, but very clearly a Vaishnav. As the case was being argued by the lawyers, he was writing his decision. So the decision, by the time the lawyers finished doing the lawyering, the decision was already written. And if you've been involved in anything, or knowing of anything to do with court, it doesn't happen that way. After, you wait months and the judge writes a decision. Once a month, he was a householder. Once a month, he would shave his head with leaving a little sika, a little tuft of hair in the back, as a householder. 10 o'clock, the court began. 1 o'clock, recess. Then he came home, took his midday bath, because brahmanas take bath thrice daily. Took his bath, took a very small lunch. From 2 to 5, he again is in the courtroom. Okay, now he's back home. It's 5 o'clock. Remember, he takes rest between 7:30 and 8. He's got 10 children. He's back at home at 5 o'clock. He did translating. Rather than his own writing, it was translating from either Bengali or Sanskrit to English. Then in the evening, he spent time with his children. He had his second meal of the day, which was rice, again a couple of chapatis, and a half quart of milk. Now he has this large body, and one might think he ate a lot. He didn't eat a lot. He didn't sleep a lot. He gave a lot to everybody who he associated with. So he's living in Puri as a magistrate, and he became very inspired by the life of Lord Chaitanya to go live in Vrindavan. So he decided to just go to Vrindavan. So as he was going to Vrindavan, he had a dream. And in the dream, as he was traveling to Vrindavan, had a dream that said, no, don't go to Vrindavan. Go to the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and establish the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in a dream. So he went back to Puri. And he made a request of the government, please transfer me someplace close to the place of Lord Chaitanya. The government said, no, you're too valuable. So he asked 3 times over a period of time. Each time they said no. So he said, I quit. So they said, okay, we'll transfer you to Krishnanagar near. So they made a transfer. And as he was doing, since he was living in Krishna, living near Krishnanagar, those of you who have been to Mayapur, you know it's very near to the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he lived in a place called Godrumdweep. Godrumdweep is, this is a long explanation. It has significance specifically for the chanting of Krishna's holy name. It will take too long to explain. So it's on the other side of the river. And one day, one evening, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was standing on a rooftop, and he saw in a distance, going upstream of the Ganges, he saw a tall, luminous structure in the middle of a paddy field, a rice field. Hint, there's no big structures like that in the middle of a rice field. He had a vision. And he wrote that he invited his nephew or something, come look at this. And the nephew saw it too. It was just a vision of a grand temple lit up in the middle of the night, right in the middle of a rice field. So he wondered, what's that? So he started doing some research. Because he's a government officer, he was a scholar, he had access to government maps. He had access to government maps, so he went and looked at the government maps to see where is... He suspected that it was the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what he saw. It's a very long, complicated thing to explain. In a book called Ananta Samhita, it says, this is before Lord Chaitanya appeared, it predicted the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. In details, it describes where he would live, what he would do. It says that after Lord Chaitanya disappeared, the place of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes would become submerged by the Ganges. That is, the Ganges would shift its course. Rivers do that. And the place where Lord Chaitanya lived would be underwater, submerged for 200 years. And after that 200 years, the Ganges would shift again, and the place where Lord Chaitanya resided would again be not covered by water. And it describes in that Ananta, and all of those things happened. The maps that he looked at showed those things happened. This was predicted long, long ago, and sure enough it happened. And one of the things it says is the birthplace of Mahaprabhu was on the eastern side of the Ganges. But in the modern time in which he lived, the place of Lord Chaitanya's appearance was taken to be on the western side of the Ganges. So there was a discrepancy. Eastern side, western side. The place that he saw this vision was on the eastern side. So he did further scriptural research and further map research and further investigation. And he came to the conclusion that what I saw was marking the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he went in that direction. And he started asking the local villagers, what is over there, roughly in that area? That it's just agricultural field, except one little piece of land. And one little piece of land, it's useless. So what do you mean it's useless? What? It doesn't grow rice. You can't grow eggplants. It only grows tulsi. Oh, it only grows tulsi. Can you show me where that place is? So he saw the place, and there were some local elderly Vaishnavas that said, that's the place, that's a sacred place over there. That's why it only grows tulsi. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought Jagannath Das Babaji, a very, very elder, 130 years old person that couldn't even walk. He had to be carried. At that time was carried in a basket, a pole, and carried him in a basket. And when Jagannath Das Babaji, 130 years old, can't walk, got to that spot, he jumped out of the basket. Said, this is it. This is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So although he, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was a government officer, he knew, think about it for a moment, the persons who thought the other place was the birthplace of Mahaprabhu and their whole economy is based upon that being the birthplace of Mahaprabhu, they're going to be in opposition to some other place being the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. Like, you know, their livelihood. He was risking his life. This is Bengal 100 years ago. during British rule where some religious person is saying, that's not the birthplace of Mahaprabhu, it's over here. He went door to door. Government officer, door to door, please give 1 rupee. It wasn't just the 1 rupee. It was to persuade people to accept that that's the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he built a little temple for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and requested his son to make a grand temple. When they were digging the excavation for the grand temple, down and down and down, prepare the foundation for the temple, they found a deity embedded in the ground, because the water of the Ganges had covered the place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's residence, but the archaeological relics were there under the ground. The deity that was worshipped by Mahaprabhu's father. They found it. It's now on the altar of that grand temple, the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is some of the detail of how one of the places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth and his pastimes were established. It wasn't easy. It took spiritual power, spiritual acumen to accomplish that. And many, many, many other places, based exactly, because it gives, in the scriptures, it gives so many feet, because from where Mahaprabhu lived, so many steps away was the place where Advaita Acharya resided, and the house of Srivas Thakur, and then further where Marigupta, and this one, that one. The places were established according to what scripture said. But he also had the spiritual power to establish. I'll give another example. So he then told his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, make an annual event where you take everybody to the different places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes here in Navadvip. Just as it's done in Vrindavan, do so here. So here's a little story. She wants, what would you like? Would you like something? Would you like something? Would you like something? You want some paper to draw on? There we go. Give the girl some paper to draw on. Okay. So, Bhaktisiddhanta, taking the order of Bhaktivinoda Thakur on his head, he was one day doing, just for a walk, he was walking, chanting japa. Some devotees were with him having kirtan, just like we were doing, singing, playing musical instruments, going through some area. And he said, you see that piece of land over there? It was up on a little bit of a hill. Find out who owns the land, what if they're willing to sell it, I'd like to buy it. He didn't give any more detail than that. And so they found out who owned it, and the man was saying, said to the Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples, maybe she needs to go to another room and she'll be happy. It's tough for a kid sitting there for so long. Come on, Dad. Okay. Maybe I better hurry up and finish up. So, but it's a very nice story. So, the devotees of Bhaktisiddhanta went and found the man that owned the land. He was a landholder. He was a wealthy man. And he owned many lands. And he said, your leader, your spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta, why would he have any interest in this land? It won't grow anything. I'll give him so much. I'll just give it to him, agricultural land. I'll just give it to him. Tell me how much you want. Ask him, how much do you want? I'll give you my best agricultural land. Bhakti, they went and gave that message. Bhaktisiddhanta said, no. I want that land, and I don't want to have him give it to me. I want to buy it. So there's a formal contract of sale. And the man finally relented and gave it to him. And then Bhaktisiddhanta said, start building, digging down to build a foundation for a temple. And they couldn't get anybody to go there because it was said there was this huge cobra, like a giant cobra. And nobody could go there. The cobra would strike. So no workers would go there. So Bhaktisiddhanta went there. And he stood there and chanted, and the cobra just went slithering down the slope. And the cobra was gone. So the workers would work. He was protecting the place. As they were digging down, they found the ruins of an old palace. And the palace was the palace of a great king, Suvarna Sen. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did the research, and that was the place where the palace was. There are columns. You can see that, you know, shape that columns have. I don't know, scallop look, in and out and in and out and out and round. You know, tall columns. Deep, because that's what was underneath. It was a palace. It was the palace of Suvarna Sen. And that's one of the places where Lord Chaitanya would go, having kirtan. So that now there's a nice temple there. How does somebody find or discover the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes? You have to be spiritually powerful. You have to be empowered by Krishna to do that. So that was one of the gifts of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So his writings, his giving teachings to householders, how to use the bhakti principles in their lives. He established the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, many of them, and it further gave that service to his son. He was a great visionary. I shared this morning in the morning class where Srila Prabhupada in one morning walk in Mayapur was in a mood of glorifying Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he went on and on and on and on and on and on about just, he became more and more enthusiastic to describe his vision. He at a time when there's British occupancy, and even Gandhi, later, Gandhi was saying, people will pay no attention to India until we become free from British rule. During that prior period of time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was wanting to tell the world about who was Lord Chaitanya, when nobody knew who was Lord Chaitanya. He wanted the world to know. So he wrote a book, Lord Chaitanya, His Life and Precepts, in English. 86 pages long. Out of his own pocket, he paid for it. And he sent it to universities all over the world. So the universities, at least the scholars, would know who was Lord Chaitanya, his life and teachings. We know that's a fact because later, is anybody here from Canada? McGill University. You from Canada? McGill University is a big university in Canada. One of the devotees went to the library there, and they found a copy, 1896. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, The Life and Precepts of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There was one found in Bangkok, and he sent to all around the world, so that at least the intelligent people, the educated, scholarly people, they should know who was Lord Chaitanya in English language. 1896. He was a visionary. He said, the day will come when people from all over the world, from Russia, from Africa, from America, from Europe, from China, will come to Mayapur and sing Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana. And that day has come when people from all over the world have come to Mayapur. He was a visionary. When there was nothing, he saw something. And he laid the groundwork for what we're doing. For me to go to Beijing, I wouldn't have a reason to go to Beijing as a sannyasi, to go there other than the message of Lord Chaitanya and chanting Hare Krishna. We do it in a different way than here, but we do it. And person from China come to visit Mayapur and take part in the glorification of Lord Chaitanya. And all nationalities of the world. He was a visionary, and he brought these things into, he laid the ground for Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada and the next generation, us, to fulfill that vision that he had. The fifth gift was he established Namahatta. Now that term Namahatta has been borrowed by ISKCON to mean basically a house program. Yes? You use that term here? You haven't heard it. In different places. L.A. is very common. They say Namahatta. We're having a Namahatta program on Friday. It means a house program. That's how we use it. But what he did was, he went into the interiors of the land and established where people were not literate, where there's one person, like the village elder, who could read. He gave him teachings and taught the elder how to present and give the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the people of Bengal. He established 2,000 of such places, along with raising 10 children and being a government officer and writing 110 books and finding the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. He established that and gave a format for it that could be replicated anywhere. When fast forward about 180 years, now in ISKCON we have that system as Bhakti Vriksha. You've heard that term. It's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's system modernized. He was a visionary that gave and gave and gave and gave. Even when he was a government officer, he would chant a huge number of rounds regularly. Sometimes he would take little side excursions. He took his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, to the temples of South India. Bhaktisiddhanta took notes and later wrote books on all of that. He taught his son how to print, how to do the binding, how to do the printing, how to do the editing, how to do everything in book publication. He gifted his son with that gift that he had so that he could do the same thing, and he gave that to Prabhupada, who's given it to us. We're deeply indebted to Bhaktivinoda Thakur for his gift of Krishna consciousness at a time when it had practically disappeared. He brought it again to the surface, and Bhaktisiddhanta spread it widely throughout India, and Prabhupada, of course, under Bhaktisiddhanta's order and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's vision, took Krishna consciousness all over the world. So it's a very, very important personality in our line. Very powerful, brilliant, compassionate, versatile. He spent some of his final days living in seclusion in Puri, near the place of Haridas Thakur's Samadhi, just chanting japa all day long for a few years. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was way up there. He, even in his writings, he describes his realizations of his swarup, his spiritual form, his spiritual service to Radha and Krishna. He's an incredible acharya. So we're honoring him on his disappearance day. And I hope this has been not too much for you new guests to hear all these things. But it's honoring an important personality for us, followers of Lord Chaitanya. Hare Krishna.